Locked On Giants, your daily New York Giants podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, New York Giant fans, and welcome to another edition of Locked On Giants, part of the Locked On Podcast family, your team every day. Patricia Traina here with you. So glad to have you here on St. Patty's Day. It is March 17th as I record this, and a very happy St. Patty's Day to all our Irish listeners and non-Irish listeners who are out there celebrating the holiday. And I hope everyone is doing well and is hanging in there as we navigate through these rather unprecedented times. You know, we do have football stuff going on. We have free agency, or the pre-free agency period going on, and the Giants getting on the board in terms of some pending transactions. And on the line with me, I have a special guest by the name of Mark Lillibridge. Now, you might recognize the name. He is a former NFL player, played back in the 1990s. He is also a former agent, and he has since switched gears and now contributes film breakdowns and whatnot for the Brawl Network. And delighted to have him on the line with me. So, Mark, thank you so much for taking the time to come.
I absolutely love it. I love talking football. You're a great follow on Twitter, Patricia. So I am excited to be on your show, and let's talk some Giants football.
Let's do it. All right. So, Mark, let's start off with some of the signings that the Giants have reportedly made. And we'll say reportedly because obviously a contract is not a contract until the name is on the dotted line and the physicals are taken and everything. But we have pending contracts. And if we could, let's start off with James Bradberry and what he brings to the table.
You know what? I think he is. He's the prototypical corner in today's NFL, right? Everybody wants 6 foot plus corners. Guys that can flip their hips, guys that can run and do coverage. This is a guy that has really, he's played 60 regular season games, if I'm not mistaken. I want to say he started every one of them. And so a guy that comes from the Carolina Panthers. So, of course, you know, Gettleman has had some history with that organization. I think it's one of this guy is probably their best signing. I think it was a huge get for them because you have to. In today's game, you have to have corners that can cover. And typically, you want to be able to have, you know, a legit one corner. And you can kind of, you know, you can hide another couple other corners by, you know, bracketing coverages with safeties or drop linebackers or hybrid linebackers. But Bradberry is that alpha dog corner that you want to sign. And he'll be on the team's, best receiver if that's how they do it. I'm a fan of, and this is how I've always kind of come up with scouting, is you take your best corner and put him on the number two receiver for the other team, and then double team the number one receiver. And so the Bradberry would be a guy that if you're playing any team, you could put him on. You could probably lock down most number ones, but if you put him on, you know, an example, if you take him and you're playing the Dallas Cowboys, you know, you put him on the number two receiver. You put him on, don't let him play Amari. Let Amari Cooper get bracketed, you know, with a corner and a safety, and then put Bradberry on the number two, number two receiver, and take away that side of the field all game long. Bradberry's a legit signing, and a Giant fan should be happy to have him.
Now, it's interesting because obviously the Giants with a new coaching staff, Patrick Graham is the defensive coordinator, had 1 year down in Miami, and there's some debate as to how much of Miami's defense was his and how much of it belonged to Brian Flores's. But based on, you know, the characteristics so far that they've shown in terms of the defensive players, Bradberry and linebacker Blake Martinez, what clues can we get as far as what Graham might be running or planning to run for the Giants?
Well, I think you wherever Graham's history is, right? I mean, you take what you get from everyone, I hope. I mean, I would think that the good defensive coordinators, if you're at that position in the NFL, you know, you come up in different three or four systems, be that from college or high school, maybe in the ones you played when you were coming up. You take pieces from all of them and then make them in a hybrid of your own. So I think you're in today's game, you have to be able to be position flexible, and you have to be able to take guys, players that can do multiple things. Two things. You have to be able to rush the passer. And you have to be able to cover, the receiver. And so the number one receiver, number two receiver. So if you can do those things in today's game, you're going to have some success. But you're going to have to be able to adapt on the fly. And that's going to have to be able to change and be able to do things differently, game plan differently, whoever that opponent is. And so I think Graham needs to be able to do that. I think that they do have, like I said, with Bradbury, I think they have an alpha dog corner, which you need. And then you can kind of take the other 10 guys on defense and move them around accordingly to whoever you're game planning that week.
Very interesting thing. And, you know, just I want to go back, if I could, to Bradbury. You know, we watched the Giants invest quite a bit of capital in the young cornerbacks. And I think, you know, DeAndre Baker, who I would imagine is probably going to start opposite of Bradbury, is going to, you know, he showed some improvement down the line. But when you add a player of Bradbury's capabilities, and you know, we don't know yet who the free safety is going to be, but you have Jabril Peppers who's going to come back. Just how much of the dynamics in that backfield is going to change? Is it going to be, I guess, more aggressive, or what can they do that maybe they couldn't do in the past?
Well, I think one of the things we have Peppers, who was, of course, you know, a big part of the trade, you know, with Beckham. And then I think it's going to getting a guy like Bradbury is going to, that right there automatically, right? I mean, it helps Baker, a young player who's a first round pick last year. Automatically, now he has a veteran to look to. And there's some things, just like we talked about what Graham is going to take from Flores' defense in Miami, it's the same thing for these guys, right? Now, DeAndre Baker can sit and talk to a guy like Bradbury who's had 60-plus game snaps in the NFL and say, hey, man, tell me, teach me some of these tricks. Tell me what I need to be doing here. Help me with some film, you know, breakdown. Tell me with all these little minute things that you just can't, from watching film, you can find a lot. But until you play actual live snaps in the NFL, it's just different, no matter what level you played at college. And so he's going to be able to help a guy like Corey Ballantyne, who I think is going to have a really good year this year. I really think that he came on last year, and I think he's going to be a guy that for a 6th-round pick, I think the Giants have found themselves a really good player there. And even to that point, I mean, he's going to help a guy like Julian Love, you know, at the safety position. And so just having a veteran to be able to come in and be able to speak the game and talk to those guys, it's great having a great position coach. It's great having a defensive coordinator. But you can learn a lot from guys that are in the room with you that are going through the same things that you're going through or have been through the same things you're going through. That's great to have a coach that you can talk to, but you can't talk to a coach the same way you talk to a player. It's just different. It's just different. They're not dynamic. And so for Bradbury to be coming in and talk to those young guys, I think it'll be huge for that unit, for that room of DBs for the Giants.
They also have in Jerome Henderson, who's the position coach there, they have a guy who's played the position. I mean, how much of a difference does that make in terms of, you know, a guy who maybe hasn't played it in the NFL level in terms, you know, especially when you're talking about a young group like that?
Well, you know, I was a teammate of Jerome, so I know Jerome well. And I think that makes a huge difference. But I think it also is because Jerome can take some of those experience from a player and give them back to him. But Jerome hasn't played for a long time, but he has been around a lot of systems, right? I mean, he's been with the Cowboys. He's been in other organizations. So he's able to then now talk to him about, hey, this is how we, you know, played this defense. This is how we, you know, shifted to this defense. This is how we covered this receiver or this tight end. And so I think having a player, you know, a guy that's been there and done it, the way he speaks the game is a little bit different than somebody who hasn't done it. And I think that makes a big difference, especially, you know, culturally with a lot of these guys. They want a guy that they know they can trust and a guy that they can talk to, that you always got to be careful on that, right? Because they're never your friend. They can talk to you about certain things. But ultimately, at the end of the day, you know, Jerome Henderson's got to take care of himself when it comes to take care of his family. And he's got to answer to the GM and to Gettleman and to the head coach, where the players, you know, they got to take care of themselves, right? And they're a commodity that can be moved and shipped at any point. So I think I do think that there is some level of trust that I had myself, but just talking to former players and talking to players that are currently in the NFL, there's a level of trust knowing a guy played the position that's coaching you, because you can literally then go back and lean on his game experience. And like I said, there's something to that.
We're speaking with Mark Lillibridge. He is a 25-year veteran of the NFL, having been a player, having been an agent, and now doing some scouting work for the Brawl Network. And we are talking about just some of the changes on the Giants. And in particular, we're trying to focus on the free agents. And Mark, let's turn our attention to Blake Martinez, the linebacker that the Giants came to terms with, agreed to terms with, I guess it was late last night, Monday night. What is your initial scouting report on him? What does he bring to the table that maybe the Giants were missing?
Well, I think he brings some toughness. I think he brings some smarts. I think he is a savvy veteran player. I think he is a solid tackler. He does a lot of things that you want from your middle linebacker position. The one thing he doesn't, that I would like him to do more of, and I've talked about this and when I've broken him down, is I wish he had more wow plays or more splash plays. He's not a big-time playmaker. Consistent and does a lot of the things that you want, right? He's going to make your open field tackles, which is tough in the NFL. You know, he can make tackles from sideline to sideline in the tackle box. But he doesn't have a lot of big-time like turnovers in his career, not a lot of big-time sacks, not a lot of – I think he's got one interception in his career. I just wish there are some things about his game that I wish he was more for the money they're paying him. I think that I would like to see more just wow factor. But again, he's consistent. And if you're trying to build a culture and you're trying to have a change in your linebacker room and in for your defense, I think he brings that some stability to that room. And I think that he will help the overall dynamics of that defense. Again, I think, Graham had him and spent some time with him in Green Bay. And so I think that's the familiarity there. But to be honest with you, I don't know if there's a lot of drop-off from David Mayo, who they were able to re-sign, and if there's that much of a difference of their level of playing. I like David Mayo. I think David Mayo was a great sign to get back for the Giants, and I think they're very similar type players. And so it'll be interesting to see how they use both those guys moving forward in this defense, along with Lorenzo Carter, who I think could have a chance of a breakout year. I honestly – we'll tell you, and I'm biased a little bit just because I like the guy and I know him. I think losing Marcus Golden, if they end up losing Marcus Golden, will be a bigger loss for their defense than any addition of Blake Martinez. It's hard to replicate 10 sacks. And for a team that, like I said, you need to have pass rushers. You have Leonard Williams, which is a great franchise, tag guy. But they don't have a lot of other great pass rushers besides that right now. And Martinez or Mayo aren't bringing that to the game. So it'll be interesting to see where they, what they do, if they look to add pass rushers in free agency or in the draft.
Yeah, you bring up a good point with Marcus Golden. I just find it kind of interesting. Now, obviously, they could be talking to him behind the scenes. We don't know that. Sure. But I just find it interesting that there hasn't been a whole lot said about him. And I don't know if it's because maybe they feel Lorenzo Carter can do that role that Golden did. Maybe, because Golden was a James Betcher signing. It could be any number of reasons. But yeah, it's quite interesting that they're not, at least not that we're hearing. And again, maybe they are, but you just don't hear a whole lot involving Marcus Golden, not just from the Giants, but anywhere.
Yeah, and I think, that's the one thing that's interesting about the free agency nowadays. Even when I started out as an agent or when I was scouting, for the Packers or Chiefs or even as a player, this quote unquote legal tampering, I hate using that term. I think it's a silly term, but these 2 days where you can kind of really get the deal done. And like you brought up multiple times, Patricia, that you can't sign them until 4 o'clock on Wednesday or whatever the date is, the actual date, the league year starts tomorrow is, these deals are getting agreed upon. And so sometimes, there's these, we're seeing some guys, we're going to see some still action tonight. But typically 70% of the deals are done before the league actually starts, before the league year actually starts. So, I think you'll see some guys like I thought Corey Littleton was the best free agent linebacker in this group. And he just got signed by the Raiders recently. Same thing with Blake. Just got, like you said, signed late last night. I mean, Joe Schubert, who's I think one of the better linebackers in the group for the Cleveland Browns, he hasn't signed anywhere. We really haven't heard a lot of talk about him. Heck, the best player ever in the NFL, Tom Brady. I mean, there's still, nothing's happened with him. So I think this next 12-hour window, unfortunately for you, you probably won't get a lot of sleep. But I think it's going to be – I still think there's going to be a lot of action happening here. We're still sitting here, midday on Tuesday. I still think in the next 24 hours, 12 to 24 hours, you're still going to see about 10 to 15 big-time deals happening with players. And I think Golden will be in that mix.
Yeah, and I think you're right, because it just seems like once we get to the official start of free agency, it just becomes very anticlimactic because sure. All the deals are done already. Just going back to Blake Martinez for a minute, I've always said that, you know, you look at a linebacker's tackle production and all tackles are not created equal. In other words, a guy can have 100 tackles per year, but if 60% of them are coming past the line of scrimmage, you know, 12, 15 yards down the field, that's not as good production. When you look at Martinez, where, you know, off the top of your head, where do the bulk of his tackles come? Do they come within that first 7 yards within the, you know, from the line of scrimmage, or are they more downfield?
That's a great point. And I think that's the rub here for me is he doesn't have a lot of tackle for losses. He doesn't have a lot of tackles at the line of scrimmage. A lot of the tackles are because he's not a real downhill player. He is more of a lateral type player who can then explode and get to the edge and do things like that. But a lot of his tackles are in the pass game and, you know, where guys caught a ball on him. And there's not a lot of dynamic tackles. And like I said before, not a lot of wild plays. Is he consistent? Does he get the guy down? Yeah, once he wraps up, he doesn't have a lot of missed tackles. But a lot of them are, you know, a positive gain for the offense. And so that's where, you know, when I look at it, when I scout guy, linebackers or when I scout players, you know, no matter what position, I want to see those, what kind of, you always look at their negative plays, but then I also want to see the positive plays. Don't just give me the, that's your job play. Like your job is to make tackles. So when I'm grading a linebacker, I have a plus play, a circle, which is just means he did his job, or a negative play. Did he bust a coverage? Did he miss a tackle? Things like that. And Blake Martinez has a lot of zero plays, which means, hey, good football play, solid job at doing your job, but that's what you're paid to do. And so, you know, to pay big money to a player, I want to see a lot more positives. I'm not saying they all have to be positives. You have to have consistently zeros, which is good. But for me to get big money, which he has a nice contract, I'd like to see a lot more positive plays. And that's not to say that can't happen, in this defense. But in a defense in Green Bay, where he had a ton of dynamic playmakers around him last year with both Za'Darius Smith and Preston Smith, really strong, you know, Kenny Clark in the defensive line, good safeties with Adrian Amos and Jahir Alexander at corner. You know, Blake was consistent, but he wasn't, you wouldn't sit and say, man, this is a Pro Bowl type player, or this is a guy that just is a wow. Like, man, we got to have that guy. And that's not knocking him. I mean, good for him. I love guys that get paid. I love guys. He's had a heck of an NFL career, and he's done a lot more than I ever did as a player. But someone just watching him as a player, I hope that he can step his game up a little bit more and get the dollars that he's going to be getting paid in the Giants, because it's going to rely on that. He's going to have to make more plays in the passing game and interceptions. He's going to have to cause more turnovers, force fumbles to live up to the contract.
Yeah, definitely agree. And, you know, I also want to ask you, I'm going to tap into your agent background now, if I could. One of the things I've noticed with how the Giants are structuring these contracts based on reports is they're moving away from signing bonuses and going more towards roster bonuses. They're 3-year deals so far, has been reported. And there's a roster bonus due, I think, on the 20th. March 20th, which would be the second day of the league year. And I just wanted to get your take on that, because I think more and more teams are doing that to avoid potentially dead money cap hits down the line. And I just wanted to see what your thoughts were about that.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to structure it. And I think that if the agent's going to allow that, then, you know, that's up to the agent. I'm a firm believer to get as much money guaranteed and upfront as you possibly can, because we've seen from the last couple of weeks or last week of the stock market, what was the money you had last Friday is completely different than the money you have today. And so I'm a firm believer cash in hand is the king, because you never, I'd rather have it be making money for me than making money for the team. And so if I can get that money up front or get that money right now and invest it for myself, as opposed to waiting on the team to invest it, it's making money for them. I think that's an agent's job. But again, for a team structure, it's great, because you can see if this player is a guy you want to have on your roster, if he lives up to that contract. Also, what plays into this a little bit is a new collective bargaining agreement that was just ratified or will be ratified once the new league year starts, is because there's going to be different money allocations for 17 games. There's going to be a different money allocation for whatever that number comes out to as for the TV rights. There's going to be the, you know, gambling revenue. There's going to be other revenues that play a factor in this. And I think a lot of teams right now in this CBA in this year are kind of waiting to see where that is. And so they're putting money into those second, third years just because I think the cap will definitely go up. How much it goes up will be, we'll have to wait and see. But I think that that plays a factor into it as well.
Yeah, definitely. It's definitely a fascinating thing. And that's one of the things I look forward to every year is to see what teams are doing, what new mechanisms they're putting into contracts, and what the trends are. And that was definitely something that popped out at me as a mechanism, especially a team like the Giants, who I think have been like top five in dead money the last couple of years.
Yeah, and that's, again, I mean, that's part of that has been the turnover and just philosophies from Coughlin and head coaches and who you're going to get and who you're paying. And so I think some of that comes down to is finally, you know, Gettleman's got to come in and pull the reins back and say, okay, hold on a second. This is how we did it, you know, or how I've done it in the past, and this worked for us. But then at the same point, you have to adjust with the game. I mean, you have to look around and you have to say, okay, man, how do the Denver Broncos do it? How do the Seattle Seahawks do it? How a team that's been consistently good with the cap, two of them are the Steelers and the Ravens. And so if I'm running a front office, I want to talk to those guys and find out, hey man, how do you guys handle the cap and how do you structure contracts and look at the history of those kind of things? You know, put your own spin on it, like Graham will with his defense, and we talked about that. But at the same point, learn from some other organizations and talk to them and say, hey, you know, we're gonna steal a couple ideas from you. And I think that has to be, you have to be able to evolve with the game as the collective bargaining agreement evolves. As players evolve, we're seeing, I think a lot of guys are starting to see 3-year deals because I think they will see where the salary cap will go. And it's kind of, we're in an interesting time in the NFL, not only just with everything going on with the coronavirus and things like that, but just with the way things are structuring with this new collective bargaining agreement. I'm going to get off topic here. I wasn't a real big fan of it for the players. I mean, you're one piece of leverage with 17 games, and to not be able to get an opt out after 5 years, that's what caused the last lockout. Was the owners were able to, you know, they had a caveat to be able to opt out of the contract, and they did after 5 years because they saw the where the money was going. And for the players to be locked into a 10-year deal, I thought they gave that up. Their one piece of leverage was that extra game. I thought they gave that up too quickly. But again, the NFL did a masterful job of selling a deal. They were able to get some media to buy into it, and then they were able to get the lowest common denominator players, the majority of the guys, that say, "Hey, man, if you guys want to smoke some weed, we're gonna take away the limits and the penalties of that. We're gonna give you instant cash right now because you might not be around in 3 or 4 years. So we're gonna give you $100,000, you know, bump in your pay." And that resonated with a lot of guys and the rank and file guys. And so I think it was. I think that they will regret, the NFLPA will regret not having an opt-out as they see, because the game is only growing. They're going to be upset at themselves for not getting more of the pie and for only getting 48% of it moving forward. When they can, it'll go up, the revenue sharing will go up 48.5% for 1 year with the media, and then it goes back to 48%. That's just not, I don't think that's good enough. I think they should have got to 49 or 50%. But again, It's done, but I think we'll come back and look at this 5 years from now, and I think the players that are still a part of it, the young guys that were part of this, will sit and say, yeah, we could have got more.
Yeah, I found it kind of disheartening, I guess, a little bit. I think 20% of the players didn't vote. And I know, right, you know, not to get political or anything, I never understood, when your future is on the line, why wouldn't you want to vote? I mean, this thinking that, oh, my vote won't matter, I just think that's just silly. But that's just me.
100% agree. I'm with you. That doesn't make sense to me. It wasn't like it was you had to go to it's not like it wasn't available. It's not like you had to go out to a polling place and stand in line and get your sticker, I voted. This was something that was sent to your phone. And every one of those guys has, you know, a marketing agent or somebody that can help them with it. The simple fact that 20% didn't it's mind-boggling to me. But again, I think that falls on the NFLPA. I think that falls on the leadership. I think they could have streamlined this voting better and done a better job. But again, it is what it is. It's where we are, and I'm not mad about it. As a former player, my benefits, it helped a couple of my benefits. It's not ideal, but I think I still think we'll look back on this and say that, again, like we did last time, that the owners won over on the extension, and they did this time for sure too.
We're talking with Mark Lillibridge. He is a former NFL player, a former NFL agent. He is now a draft analyst, a player personnel analyst, I think, for the Brawl Network. Does a great job. He posts little clips, his evaluations of players. Make sure you are checking him out. He's at Bridges Football on Twitter. Mark, just want to wrap up with a few thoughts, if I could, from you. The Giants still have a few needs that they haven't been able to address yet in free agency. Obviously, offensive line comes to mind. I think slot cornerback comes to mind. Receiver, you know, adding some more speed on the offensive side of the ball. I know they just signed a tight end who's more of a blocking tight end. Based on the free agents that are currently available as we record this, and again, for those who don't remember, we're recording this on a Tuesday afternoon, March 17th. Who are some of the potential fits that you think that you can maybe see the Giants maybe taking a look at?
You know, I don't know. To be honest with you, I don't know if that's if I'm Gettleman or if I'm the in the front office of the Giants. I kind of think I'm done in free agency unless you can find a value guy here and there. And I don't know. I'm not maybe a value offensive lineman, maybe a second tier or third tier. You know, offensive lineman. I think you have to go into the draft and start building this thing. I mean, you have a young quarterback that you have to build around. You have a young running back that you have to build around. And that's where it starts. I mean, that's where it starts with the Giants. We talked about it. You have young secondary players. You went out, you got your big money corner, you got your big money linebacker, you franchise your D tackle. I think you now have to kind of save some money and start using this draft, use your draft capital to go get some more young guys and put them around the quarterback as you grow and help this offensive line. I just that would be my thing. You put big money in your tackle last year, or was it 2 years ago, whatever, with Nate Solder. And so I just think you have to, you know, you got Zietler, you put big money into him. You put money into those positions. I don't know if you're not winning. I mean, I hate to say this, but you're not winning a ton of games next year. And I just think you're really building for 21 and 22. And I just think it's for me, you got to do that through the draft. And the teams that go out and try to win free agency without having a plan or a legit dominant plan in place, I think they end up retreading and doing it again 3 or 4 years down the road. And I think that you've seen that happen with multiple teams. You know, over the years, I mean, remember, I don't know, it was a while ago, but remember the Eagles came out when they had Vince Young, and I know I'm dating myself a little bit here, but when Vince Young, they came out, and, you know, but Giants fans know Eagles fans, and when they said, or the Redskins, hey, we're going to get all these MVP guys, we're going to sign all these stars, these Pro Bowl-type players, and we're just going to win. Well, they didn't come together because it wasn't a team. It was a bunch of individuals. And so I think that they got some, they have, the one thing I will say for Gettleman, and I'll give Dave his credit here, is the guys he brought in, Bradbury, that he brought in with Martinez, getting Mayo. These are locker room guys, and these are guys that will buy into the quote unquote Giants way and will help lead these younger guys, because you do have a pretty young team. And so that's where I would just sit with it, and I would just say, hey, man, we don't need, unless somebody falls into our lap, I wouldn't chase anybody. I wouldn't throw big money at another player. I would use it and get some draft capital and try to really win this in come the draft. You know, coming up here in a couple months.
And that leads to an interesting question I have. Number four, the Giants have the number four overall pick in the draft. Offensive tackle, or do they go Isaiah Simmons, who I think, you know, next to Chase Young is probably, I would think, going to be the best defensive player off the board?
You know what? That's an interesting question. I did my mock draft. Now, granted, this was all done before free agency, and I think that always changes, where your draft is and the positions you need, because now there's a position of need. You're not maybe in as big of a need at corner for the Giants as you would have been before you got Bradbury. But I do think that there's some – I think there's – it'll be interesting to me, because I think there's so many quarterbacks are getting pushed up, and where guys are moving pieces around. I think we all know Joe Burrow is going number one to Cincinnati Bengals. And I think that's we're pretty solidified, with him going to be there. But I think there's some other guys. The corner from Ohio State is a guy that I think I would love. But I think if I'm the Giants, and this is just me, I think Tristan worse is a tackle from Iowa. That would be a guy that I could see them definitely going after. I think he's the best tackle. You're going to have two. There's some. You have three tackles. I think there are top 10 tackles. I think you have Tristan Wirfs from Iowa. You have Mekhi Becton from Louisville, and then you have Andrew Thomas from Georgia. I think those are the consensus three top tackles. Somebody might throw Jedrick Wills in there from Alabama, but those are all guys I think those would be the first four tackles taken in this. I can see Gettleman. He already improved the defense in free agency, and I think now he's got to protect his investment, Daniel Jones. And I think doing that, getting the tackle, Tristan Wirfs from Iowa, I think would be an easy plug-and-play tackle. Put him right in. He starts from day one. And those Iowa, the one thing I'll say, and I'm an Iowa State grad, so this is really hard for me to say it, the Iowa offensive linemen, we just saw Marshall Yanda retire after 13 long, glorious career years in the Ravens. Those Iowa tackles, they've done a good job, just like the Wisconsin offensive linemen do. Those guys have a nice career, and I think Wirfs is that next guy. I think he'd be a staple along that offensive line for a lot of years for the Giants.
Very interesting. I think they go offensive tackle, too. I mean, defense, I just don't think you can force, you know, everybody says they need a pass rusher, and I agree, but I just don't think it's smart to force it when if there's not a guy there that's, you know, the right fit, especially with the cap money that it's going to take to get these guys. And you see a lot of these top pass rushers who weren't tagged, they're going elsewhere. So, I mean, that's just my take. I don't know if you agree with that, but I just don't see any point in forcing it.
Yeah, I think unless you get Okuda, the Jeff Okuda, the cornerback from Ohio State, unless he was happening to be there, you put him opposite Bradbury and you're set. But now again, DeAndre Baker, you took him first round. You know, now you're taking two corners first round, back-to-back years. I don't know if that's something that Gettleman would do. You know, Chase Young, I don't know if he's there. People will tell you they think he's the consensus best player in this draft. I think he's there for. I think you almost have to do it just because he's just so talented. I mean, he just is that answers your pass rush questions. But if those two are gone, those are the top two defenders. I think if they're still there, you take one or two of those. If not, I think going tackle is a no brainer. And like I said, that's just now again that comes down to your flavor of the month. Are you a worse guy? Are you a Becton guy from Louisville? Are you an Andrew Thomas guy? Or are you a Beckman? There's I don't think Josh Jones from Houston. He's more of a project offensive lineman, but there's some people that, I've mocked him in my first round. I think he's an athlete. I don't think he's the number four. I don't think he's the number four pick in the draft. But, they're going to have some options. It's an interesting spot to sit. And I actually think they could get some action. And again, if they're not going to get some free agents, if you're done with free agency like I would be done, I would be shopping that number four slot. And I would have no problem because I think you can get that tackle. I think you get that tackle at seven or eight, one of those two guys, because somebody's going to get up and somebody's going to take Tua. There's Justin Herbert's going to move up, the quarterback of Oregon. And a lot of people are right now in love with Jordan Love, the quarterback of Utah State. Now, people have talked about him going in the top, before he wasn't even a first rounder. And now people are talking about him being a top 10 guy because people are comparing him to Patrick Mahomes. Now, I never want to do that to a kid. But again, if you have that capital and you have that slot at number four, you can get back and pick up a second, pick up a number one in 2021. Move back and heck, maybe trade with the Jacksonville at nine or the Cardinals at eight. Maybe the Panthers want to move up. I know they just signed Teddy Bridgewater, but maybe they want to go get a young quarterback. It just depends. There's a lot of movement, a lot of things that can happen. But if I'm Gettleman, I'm actively trying to trade out of that slot and get some players because you're not winning in 2020. You're building this thing for 2021 and 2022. You need draft picks, and have a number four. You could do that.
Totally agree. Mark, final question for you, and then I'll let you go. Every year, there always seems to be one blockbuster development in the draft that we on the outside, the media, some of the draft analysts don't see coming because there's a difference of opinion in the NFL circles. Being as close to it as you are, if you had to put your finger on what you think that one big thing is, What do you think is just going to absolutely shock those of us on the outside who that one thing that we just don't see coming?
Well, again, I kind of touched on, I think Jordan Love moving up into the first round and being a top 10 pick. I think that'll be one that'll shock a lot of people. You know, another one that I think is it will be is a little bit interesting, and maybe I don't know if it's a big time shock or you know where people see this as, but I think Chase Claypool, the receiver from Notre Dame, I think he's going to go. I think he's going to get drafted a lot higher than people think. I think there's going to be, you know, I think people will sit there and tell you Judy or Lamb or Ruggs are the top three receivers, and then kind of after that it's a drop off. I think Claypool's going to get drafted as a tight end. I think somebody's going to make him an Austin Hooper slash Kittle slash Travis Kelce. I think somebody's going to draft him high. I think he's going to be a first round draft pick. I think I might be the only person that thinks that right now. But I think Chase Claypool, Notre Dame, ends up being a first rounder as a tight end hybrid, you know, inside receiver, H off the line, Y H guy, and I think that'll shock a lot of people. It wouldn't shock me, but I think that'll shock a lot of people. The other thing I'll say that the receiver position is, it won't surprise me if Henry Ruggs from Alabama ends up being the number one receiver overall.
Some very bold predictions there. I like them. Good stuff, well, Mark.
Yeah, I just think people, the talent, the one thing that's hard to do is you can't know what all 32 teams are thinking, right? And so you do your best to kind of read the tea leaves and see. But these are from what I see and from how I've been in front offices and understand how the front offices work, I think there's some people that get enamored with players. And depending on how they go, if it's coaches and you know, if it's the GM, if you're going to have some say in these meetings, you know, I mean, we've seen it. You saw it if you're in New York. I mean, you see what the pull that what Rex Ryan had in draft rooms, right? He didn't really trust Tannehill on with a lot of stuff, and so he'd want players, and it causes some friction. That happens all over. It happens in a lot of different franchises. And how much pull does John Gruden have with the Las Vegas Raiders as opposed to Mike Mayock? And so I think it's if you fall in love with a guy or you're chasing a player, you see those surprises. That's where those surprises come from. And or if you just done a lot of research on players and you just believe in your heart, hey, we got to get a guy. So those are a couple of my things. And I think those two players, I think Chase Claypool, I think a lot of people are intrigued with the way the game is changing. We are now moving to that where, you know, you don't, you guys got one in Tavea, the tight end, Levine Tuolo, former Atlanta Falcon and then came from the 49ers blocking tight end. You got your tight end that's more or less an offensive lineman, and then you got your off tight ends, your H-back type guys that are just more or less glorified receivers. They don't do a lot of blocking. They're asked maybe getting away a little bit once in a while, but their primary role is to pick up first downs, and I think Claypool fits that role very, very well.
Well, Mark, this has been very informative, very enjoyable. I thank you so much for coming on. Tell everybody what you got coming up, anything special that they should be looking out for.
No, you can always I always do my breakdowns. I love free agency. I'll be doing some player breakdowns for the draft called Bridges Breakdowns. You can find those on brawlnetwork.com. You can also, Will Witherspoon, the former NFL linebacker, 12-year veteran, and myself do a podcast called NFL Brawl. Again, all that is on Brawl Network. And that's about it, man. Just loving life and blessed to be doing what I love. And God put me in a great position to a passion for football and be able to talk about it and cover it and be involved in it as long as I have. It's been awesome. And so, yeah, just be able to follow me at Bridges Football. I promise you, you'll have some it's a fun following, and you'll hopefully learn a little bit about football.
Well, great stuff. And I've already taken one of your breakdowns. I put it into a Blake Martinez article I wrote. I embedded the tweet, and I'll definitely be checking for more stuff. Appreciate you coming on, and Giant fans, appreciate you listening. For Mark Lillibridge, this is Patricia Traina. Thank you for listening to the Locked on Giants podcast.